Welcome to Monster Mingle, a place where urban legends find romance, where full moons lead to fuller hearts, and all the thirsty singles have fangs. This is how it usually works. Illustrator Brian Polite comes up with the creatures, and I, Drew Cheel, horror author, give them a backstory. This time, Brian got the character Matilda McDonald from my book. He has many names. Watch out for Matilda. She's an unreliable narrator. She'll use scripture to get inside your head. She'll try to tempt you. Don't let your guard down, because she is not the devil you know. About me. I was starry-eyed when I arrived in the Silver City, thinking I could make it on my charm and my wit. I floated my resume all over, inquired about every position, but no one knew where I fit in. I wandered the crosswalks and Sterling Skyways for days. I was on my way out the pearly gates when a messenger came for me. "Hail, thou art highly favored," he told me I'd landed an interview with the biggest player in town. The entrepreneur's reputation preceded him. He was an industrialist, a philanthropist, and a visionary with the business acumen to keep the Silver City running. The entrepreneur wasted no time showing me to my office. He needed a spokesperson ASAP. He had 7 days to roll out his most ambitious project yet. He gave me a wardrobe for the week, adorned each outfit in precious stones, and dubbed me the Seal of Perfection, a starlet who will shine through morning. With the plans for the universe stretched across our arms, we became a power couple. We invested in atoms, watched the interests build into molecules and later elements. We shipped dark matter, hydrogen, and helium throughout the cosmos and laid the foundations for the constellations. We built a real estate empire from time and space itself. I assumed the entrepreneur meant it for the residents of the Silver City, a reward for their investment, but he had other plans. It turns out there was a pet project he'd been laboring on with his petri dishes and eyedroppers. He called it Life. While each angel was handcrafted, meticulously designed, Life was capable of sustaining growth with minimal oversight. It was with this he meant to populate his planets. When creating humanity, the entrepreneur used resources I didn't know we had. Genitals, free will, and death. I didn't get it. Why would an omniscient being give people the power to choose if he already knew the outcome? Either he was leaving them to struggle for his own amusement, or he wasn't that omniscient to begin with. My pride got the better of me. I told the entrepreneur the project would lead to chaos, and a third of the board agreed. Furious, the entrepreneur cast a lot of us out. Life-changing event. I plummeted into the mouth of a cavernous pit. The walls scraped the jewels from my outfit. Gemstones flew in all directions. My breastplate burst. My braces buckled, and my gauntlets were both ground down to grain. I crashed through sheets of ice and landed upon a bed of stalagmites. When I came to, I found my skin had taken on a bluish hue. My hair was slick with frost, and my eyebrows were lined with icicles. Thought it was strange that I could see my own breath, but then I noticed the length of silver around my right index finger. The last piece of my armor was shining in the dark. I teetered to my feet, and the ring glowed brighter. I limped toward the wall, and a stinging sensation surged down my arm. The ring was trying to warn me about something in the limestone. I waved it around until I came upon a series of ridges unlike any rock formation I'd known. When I touched it, it told me that it was the fossilized remains of something called a trilobite. The creature claimed to have dominated the seas for hundreds of millions of years. I told the trilobite, "I helped found the universe only a week ago." The trilobite said, "If that's so, then where did I come from?" I ventured further into the dark to see what else was hiding there. The pit was littered with bones, great leviathan skeletons, ribs arching like roofs, skulls yawning open as if to drink the ocean. They looked upon me with hollow, pleading eyes, and every time I tapped them with my silver, they told me what they were. These were the titans of industry that came before, the Uranides, the Vanir, the great old ones. Azathoth, dethroned from the seat of chaos, Hastur, shut out of Carcosa where the stars shine black. Each one had a similar story. The entrepreneur had been rolling out beta universes, With each new version, he took on a partner, and when the rollout was complete, the partner ended up here. I was the latest in a long line of suckers. You'd think that misery would love company, but I was all the more heartbroken. The entrepreneur had taken almost everything, but I still had that shard of silver on my finger. I used it to cut bricks from the bones and mortar from their marrow. I built a home from those who came before, and in my den I listened to their whispers. They taught me the secrets of their ruins, cosmic currencies and investment strategies. I used that knowledge to cross over into the entrepreneur's latest venture. Hobbies and interests. I had no part in getting Adam and Eve evicted from the Garden of Eden. That was a snake that got jilted when Adam wouldn't choose it to be his mate. Most of my appearances in the Old Testament were mistranslations. This is what happens when you name someone after the Hebrew word for adversary, and then you need to use the same word to describe others. People get confused. Although I'll admit, the book of Job was all me. I'd been wandering the earth, trying to get a startup going, but my hands were bound by regulations. A plague spread throughout the land, and I snuck back into the Silver City amongst a wave of refugees. With some fancy footwork, I made it all the way back to the entrepreneur's office. He was scrolling through the feed from his ticker tape machine, fat and rosy on humanity's adoration and belief. He didn't seem too surprised to see me. "Where did you come from?" It took all of my self-control not to drive my silver ring through my palm. "I've been roaming the earth, going back and forth on it." He nodded. Unfazed, I'd scurried my way out of the pit. "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil." I had considered Job. "Does Job love you for nothing? Check out his palatial estate, his bountiful lands and livestock empire, not to mention the 10 children that will ensure his legacy carries for generations. You gave him a good return on his investment. Take it back, and he'd curse you where you stand." The entrepreneur stroked his beard. "Very well, then. Everything he has is in your power, but on the man, do not lay a finger. I gave Sibian raiders a hot tip on where Job kept his oxen. Then I rained comets on his sheep and dropped a roof on his children. Job, the poor sucker, did exactly what I wanted him to do. He fell to his knees and said, 'The Lord has given, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised.'" I returned to the Silver City to find the entrepreneur wiping a tear from his cheek. He was tickled pink. I reached into the pile of ticker tape that had accumulated on the floor, pretending to care about things I already knew. "Job still has his health. Take that, and the praise train will roll right off its tracks." The entrepreneur smirked, lifted a few more sanctions, and I covered Job in lesions. Job's neighbors had heard about his misfortune. They paid him a visit to reaffirm his faith, but he had come around to my way of thinking. How could such bad things happen to a good person? If the entrepreneur was all-powerful, then he couldn't be all-good, especially if he was trying to prove something to someone. That just made him an all-powerful asshole. Job cursed the day he was born, gave in to despair, and begged the entrepreneur for death. His neighbors tried to rationalize the entrepreneur's mysterious ways, but they were arguing from ignorance, and Job knew it. "Let the Almighty answer me." The entrepreneur had been following the conversation from his desk and decided to make an entrance. He split the sky open to grant his investors an audience. And what did he have to say to them?
"Where were you when I laid the earth's foundations? Tell me who fixed its measurements. Surely you know who stretched a measuring line across it."
Of course, I know. And it wasn't a measuring line. It was tape. Had the planet held such little regard in his mind that he thought it was flat? The entrepreneur bullied Job into submission and doubled the man's losses as compensation, which just proved my point. His investors were only as loyal as their assets. My intimate details. I've convinced many Jobs to pull out of the entrepreneur's enterprise, but it took finesse to get them to invest in mine. The entrepreneur's PR department has turned my brand toxic, blaming me for the Inquisition, the witch trials, Christ, even the Catholic abuse scandal. When missionaries came to Greece, they saw idols of the Greek god Pan with his horns, hooves, and heart on, and they felt threatened. They could have told stories of a faun who'd lured children into caves so he could eat them, you know, use their imaginations. Instead, they merely passed his fashion sense on to me. They swapped my blush with a beard, my long legs with matted wool, and my firm butt with a sad, droopy tail. Then they handed me Hades' pitchfork for good measure. Here, hold this. Despite all the evidence that Pan was another entity from another mythology, his likeness was linked to me. Fine. While the faithful looked over their shoulders for a goatee and red complexion, I was free to walk among them. The more insidious my methods got, the more grandiose my depictions became. When John the Revelator was exiled to the island of Patmos, he tried his hand at writing. He had a strong premise with the apocalypse, but he did what most first-timers do and let the concept evolve into lists. Seven seals, seven trumpets, seven spiritual beings with seven bowls. Had John been a better storyteller, he might have imagined Armageddon not as a battle of swords, but of wits, where competing philosophies debated for the fate of humanity. Alas, John was more interested in who would win in a fight, the Archangel Michael or a seven-headed dragon. After John, Dante and Milton wrote some fine fan fiction. I liked how Dante populated the Inferno with his personal enemies, and how Milton made me a freedom fighter that could give a good speech. But I was never up to my tits in any ice, nor would I claim death and sin as my brain children. I never did half of what I got credit for. I never stole tools from the silver foundry to make a pact with a blacksmith. I never dared a soldier to wear a bearskin for 7 years, and I never took a small-town farmer to trial for his soul. I have never lorded over any flies. Horseshoes don't scare me, and black cats do not answer to me. They're cats. They answer to nobody. I wish I were as powerful as people believe. I wish I'd shined as bright as Venus in the morning. I wish I'd had a penthouse in Babylon. I wish my corporate headquarters had floors based on sins. But I have to budget my expenditures, same as anyone. These false etymologies have followed me for centuries. I used to agonize over every erroneous association. Now I've learned the value of good branding. Products live and die by consumers' belief in them. I've learned to lean into humanity's misconceptions, because the more they fear me, the more they believe. When the clergy made up stories to fill seats, I used their sermons as brainstorming sessions. I jotted notes over old hymns, tore out the pages, and slid them into my corset. This wasn't merely opposition research. I was insider trading. Physical features. I've held many titles over the years. These days I go by Matilda MacDonald, agent to the stars. Matilda is derived from the High German Mach and Hild, meaning strong in battle. MacDonald is a modified version of Domhall, which means world ruler. My name states my intentions, while conjuring images of telekinetic little girls and fast food chains. In the 80s, I made myself over as one of Patrick Nigel's Art Deco women. I wanted to embody the iconography of that era of greed. I already had the snow-white skin, raven-black hair, full lips, and stone-cut cheekbones. All I needed was the pixie haircut, eyeshadow, and pantsuit wardrobe. I've kept the same form for a generation, and lo and behold, greed is still in fashion. My perfect match. While my investments are in the markets of men, my heart belongs to the arts, to the music makers and the dreamers of dreams. Kings rule nations, but creators rule minds. All of my lovers possess a wealth of imagination, that je ne sais quoi that captures my attention. Over the centuries, I've played patron to many a prodigy. I massaged Niccolò Paganini's joints so he could play violin, taught Giuseppe Tartini my favorite sonata, gave Christoph Haseman visions worth painting, and tuned Robert Johnson's guitar so he could always find the right strings. I see the same spark in you. You've tried so hard to make it as an artist. You have the tenacity and the drive. Too bad the free content movement devalued your medium. Your ability never caught up with your taste. And your style was never in fashion. If you stay on the path the entrepreneur has set, you'll always be on the outside looking in. Your day job will never help you sleep at night. Your inspiration will be reduced to a nagging voice in the back of your head. You will grow cynical, watching fame go to vapid, beautiful, superficial people. You'll die knowing that your intimate thoughts will never connect with a broader audience. search engines will bury your legacy and your work will go undiscovered. But not if I have anything to say about it. I heard the prayers you whispered to bathroom stalls, shower heads and pillows. I heard the long-winded confessions that shot out of you like steam. I heard you scratching at death's door. I know what it's like to have such lofty ambitions, to think your ascent was a foregone conclusion, only to wind up scraping yourself off the ground. I've chosen you, because you are not destined for great things, but you should be. My ideal date. In the Richmond district of San Francisco, there's a yellow duplex on California Street between 24th and 23rd Avenue. The address should read 6118, 6120, and 6122, but someone has pried off all the sixes from the units. On special nights, under the light of a blood-red moon, the edifice shifts. Person with a spark of inspiration will see the black Victorian home that once stood there. If you're ready to live the life you deserve, walk up the stoop and open the front door. Don't let Togar scare you. He may be a lion, but he's as friendly as they come. Take hold of his mane and follow him through the black velvet curtains down into the basement. Don't worry that the ritual chamber hasn't been used in years. Cross the cobwebs between the candelabra and the pipe organ, past the bed of nails, toward the altar. Consider the wall of ceremonial daggers. The blades are made from ivory, flint, silver, and gold. I trust you'll know which hilt to pull. When you do, a door will open, revealing a secret corridor. The corridor is made of seven artist spaces. The first is filled with bookshelves lined with leather-bound first editions. The second, painted canvases stretched end to end. The third, drafting tables jutting out from channels. The fourth, a cube of soundproof acoustic panels. The fifth, the many monitors of an editing bay. The sixth, cryptic code on digital displays. The seventh chamber, at the heart of this tomb, is the Devil's Den, my master bedroom. I'll be waiting on that futon, beneath the sheer red canopy. Why don't you join me when you're ready to live deliciously? There are many ways to enter into a binding bargain, but I find that this one is the most fun. And that is it. If you'd like to learn more about Matilda McDonald and this iteration of the devil, pick up a copy of my book, He Has Many Names. It should be available on Amazon.com and ClashBooks.com. I also have another story called Dragon's Breath featuring Matilda McDonald. It's kind of a prequel to the book on my website. And I should have the links in the description here, unless it's on Facebook, in which case I likely forgot. But anyway, I'd really like to thank Brian Polite for going out of his way to design this character. It's such an amazing interpretation, and I couldn't be more grateful. Thank you so much for listening or watching, depending on how you're consuming this. And we've got many more monsters coming to you in Monster Mingle. I'm going to edit around that sound.